Welcome to the Gary and Kenny Show. I am the Gary in Waterloo, Iowa, joined by...
I'm not talking to you, Gary. Let's just get this right. There's no talking to you.
All right, I'm joined by Kenny Seisler in Calabasas, California, and we are joined by Mike Armstrong. And Mike, you're in where? Are you in LA?
I'm just south of Hollywood. I look out towards the hills and the Hollywood sign.
Mike is an extraordinary human being, right, Mike? And you've worked with Carol Burnett. You've worked with Stephen Wright, probably Milton Berle. Who knows? Who else have you worked with, Mike? Ken Ober.
I actually have a prop later when we're talking about Ken.
You have a Ken prop?
Well, I'm going to mention just real briefly, just to talk about context. I was with MTV, and I left MTV just as Remote Control was starting up. But I was very friendly with Ken Ober. And so Mike, you went on to do Remote Control, and I'd love to hear all the backstories on that. But I was also commenting to Gary that Ken's birthday was just a few days ago.
That's right.
So on Facebook, everybody was going on his Facebook page, you know, wishing him, I don't know, what do you wish somebody that, you know, but make a comment, you know, like we miss you and all that stuff. So these Facebook pages of people who were long gone, they stay forever?
Hopefully.
Wow. That's amazing.
Who maintains it? I mean, just a friend or it just sits there?
It's a good question. I don't know. We'll do some research and find out. But I thought I still that somehow, even if, well, when I'm gone, I will still live on somehow. And I can always check my messages from wherever I am. We look back on the show and we see the cast of characters, who they all turned out to be. Who's a list of people that and how the heck they got on the show, from Adam Sandler to all those people?
I mean, Adam's the interesting story because people didn't know him. And I find this sort of hilarious, and I'm very self-deprecating, so I'm comfortable saying this. So Doug sent Adam Sandler into my office. That was my first season as a head writer. And this guy comes in and he does a little bit of shtick. And I'm sitting there going, I don't get this guy at all.
Mm.
And I felt bad for Doug. I go, Doug's picker is broken. I mean, this is not good. So Adam comes on the show, you know, he gets huge applause and laughter. And, you know, I mean, I don't know what happened to him after the show, but he did, apparently did pretty well.
So I want to jump to the other fact that, and I'm surprised most people who have an Oscar usually put it in their shoulder behind them on camera. You have an Oscar, but where is it? How come we don't see it behind you on the shoulder?
I don't have an Oscar. There's only two Oscars that go to the best short film.
Oh, that's right. I'm sorry. I was wrong on this. That's right. You don't have an Oscar, and that explains why there's not one behind you.
With Stephen Wright that won an Oscar.
Yes.
How did your relationship start with Stephen Wright?
We went to school together, and I was the foreman of the paint crew in the summertime. And Steve showed up one day this is Boston in the summer. He showed up in a pair of shorts, no shirt, no shoes, no socks. And he said he wanted a job. And I liked him already.
Really? Okay. So
put him on the paint crew. Every day he'd show up like that. Perhaps on a cloudy day, there was a t-shirt or something. But he wanted to do stand-up comedy. And I loved the stuff he was telling me. So I would always try to put him in the room with me so that we could paint together and I could hear what he was coming up with. And when the first night he ever did comedy, we went, all the paint crew, it was great. All these people, so supportive. And he gets up on stage. I think it was the Comedy Connection. It's downtown Boston. And he rattles off so quickly and nervously, just brilliant stuff. I mean, it was like hearing the Einstein of comedy, who's nervous. And when it ended, he just bolted off the stage, out the door, and then walked down the street, and we didn't see him for the rest of the night. What kind of
reception did he get in the room?
Well, from the paint crew, gales of laughter.
Gales.
Right? For a variety of reasons. But the audience was laughing. The problem was he didn't give them time to laugh.
To process. So he thought he bombed? Is that why he ran down the street?
He didn't think he bombed. He was just, it was like anybody who would go on stage for the first time.
Yeah, he just needed to get it out of his system, process it.
Yeah, but you knew right away. If you saw him that night, you knew this guy is going to be big in comedy.
It's well, just, what he, was what then was the Oscar winning short that you made with Stephen Wright?
We had an idea. Neither of us was, he was in New York, I was living in New Jersey, unemployed, and we wanted to do a short film. And we thought this simple idea of a guy who's seeing a psychiatrist who secretly hates him.
Totally relatable too.
Yeah, totally relatable. And we came up with a bunch of scenes, you know, like my favorite was when the psychiatrist is listening to Steve and he goes to his window and looks out, and across the alley in the other building, there's another psychiatrist going just shaking his head, like just
right. Yeah.
Can you believe the shit we have to listen to? And so we make this short film. It's a long story, but I'll make it short. So I'm going to go to the Oscars. We're all going to go out from New York, and we all have two tickets. And I am head over heels in love with this girl at MTV. And I ask her if she'll go, and she goes, "Oh, I don't. Maybe. I don't know. Maybe."
Yeah.
And she was just getting over another relationship, and I kept asking her. And at one point, my dad was in town. We were having dinner, and he went, "Mike, you know, if she's not accepting an invitation to the Oscar,
yeah." I'm telling you.
Right. Maybe. Yeah. This is a no-go.
Well, finally, I wore her down. And she reluctantly flew out to LA with me. And we're staying at the Four Seasons. And we're, it was, you know, we're all, well, I was this sort of hillbilly from the East Coast at the Oscars. I mean, I can't believe they even let me in. I'd never worn a tuxedo before. We go to the Oscars. We win. Apparently, but like we're sitting in the seventh row around all these Hollywood types. The guy next to me, about an hour after the award, he said that I stood up and went, yeah, which you're not supposed to do. You're supposed to do this, okay. Right? But I was spiking the football. So we went win the thing. We go to the governor's ball. We have dinner. And then we go and we crash a party at Spago. It was the Swifty Lazar, for those who don't know, was this famous agent, long gone, who had this incredible party every Oscar night, and everybody would show up. We somehow crashed it. We just showed the doorman the Oscar, and after a while, we wore them down and we got in. We go to a club across the street. Then we go back to the hotel. This young woman and I, and I'm ready to cap off the evening with a little romance.
That's how you call it, capping it off?
Capping it off, so to speak. And as I'm undressing, she tells me that she just can't do this. I go, "Okay, well, let's go to sleep." No, Mike, this. "What? I can't do it with you. I just can't. I'm sorry." She breaks up with me on Oscar night. And I mean, it's funny now.
But it hurt at the time.
It so was not funny then. And I took off my tuxedo, and I think I took off my underwear. And I remember wandering out onto this little balcony where I could see the sun rising. It was like 4:30 in the morning. And I just stood there naked, staring out at the...
Oh, if somebody should have gotten a picture of that. Wait, were you holding the Oscar?
Somebody probably did, if only.
No, I'm not.
It would have been a great shot if you're actually holding the Oscar.
Yeah, holding the Oscar. Yeah.
So wait a second. So you did win the Oscar?
Yes.
Oh, so well, that's why I was saying that. I assume you have an Oscar. Well, how come it's not behind you in the picture?
Oh, no. The only people who get the Oscar are the producers. And so.
But you get a plaque that says,
"Don't
I
you
won
get
an
something?
Oscar."
No.
You didn't even get nothing? You didn't even get laid, Mike.
I know
that. You didn't get the statue. You didn't get laid.
Well, what? Let's just.
I mean, I could understand if you lost the award that she didn't want to sleep with you. I totally get that,
Mike.
You know, this is the other thing with like, do you ever ask a woman out for a date and her response? And this is a red flag all the time. You go, you know, "Would you like to go out to dinner?" And instead of just saying yes, they go, "Well, where?"
Yeah. So, yeah. Am I at least going to get good food?
Right.
All right.
Now, I heard that you also worked with Michael Richards.
Yeah, ooh. that was
how was that?
That was funny. So there was a guy, Jerry Kramer, great guy, another great guy. He was the producer, executive producer of Comics Only.
He knows Jerry. We know Jerry because he wrote for us.
Yeah, he worked on Comics Reply.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, lives in Vegas now.
Love Jerry.
Yeah, who wouldn't love Jerry? So Jerry calls me one day. This is long after Comics Only. He says, hey, I want you to meet Michael Richards. And so I went down to his office, and there's Michael, and we're sitting around, and we're just joking around.
Wait, is Michael on Seinfeld at this time?
Yes.
Gotcha.
Yes. This is before all the other stuff. And we just hit it off, and we meet for like an hour and a half. It's great. So 2 years later, I'm working with Dennis in New York, and my manager, Lee Kernis, calls me up and says, there's a comedy festival in Aspen this weekend. Michael Richards is the host, and he wants you to write it with him. And I go, me? I mean, I had met him for an hour and a half. I go, of all the people he's worked with, isn't there a Seinfeld writer he'd rather have? Nope, he wants you. I said, I didn't like flying. So I went, you know what, Lee, I'm not going to do that. Okay, fine. He calls me back. He says, they've doubled the offer. I go, what is it now?
Wow.
It's $20,000.
Twice what it was.
Yeah. And this and back in those days, I mean, if you do the dollar, it's probably 800,000 now.
I said no again.
And he calls me back an hour later, goes, there's 25,000. And I meant no, but now I go,
but you're a hell of a negotiator.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Keep saying no. So I end up going there. And it's, by the way, it's where I met my first wife that weekend. And I'm working with Michael, and what an adventure that was. The first morning, the producer comes to me frantic and say, you've got to go upstairs and talk to Michael. He's very unhappy about the wardrobe. And I'm saying, why am I the guy? I've met him once. So I'm an old friend. So I go upstairs into his hotel room, and he shows me the clothes he's supposed to wear. And I can see that they're sort of they're overdoing it, a little too formal. And he's pacing around going, I can't wear this. I should be wearing something like that. And he points at me, and I'm wearing this green flannel shirt. And I go, you want my shirt? Can I?
to get naked at the drop of a hat.
Yeah. I'm shirtless now. He takes it, puts it on, looks in the mirror and goes, yeah, yeah. Oh, funny. Yeah.
Yeah.
He wore that shirt. That was Saturday morning. He wore it all day. He wore it on the show. He wore it all day Sunday. And he wore it Monday morning when everyone left. And the show itself was very dramatic for a comedy show.
Because that's not what you want it to be.
No. And what happened was we were doing a rehearsal show. He didn't know it was a rehearsal show. No one told him. So he's out there giving it his all. And as he's out there, one of the stage crew comes out and puts a stool down next to him. And he just stops. And he goes, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Fuck. And she says, oh, this is just, we're not even taping this.
Yeah.
And he goes, what? And he storms off the show, and he goes downstairs to his dressing room. Okay. And it's, the show's in 2 hours. He's down there for a long time. He's not coming back up. So who do you think they go ask to go talk to him?
I hope you were wearing a green shirt.
The guy without a shirt.
His oldest friend in the world, Mike Armstrong. Mm-hmm. So I go down. I barely know him. And he's just going off. I don't blame him for being angry. Someone should have told him. But he's down there so long, and I'm sitting with him in his dressing room. The show, the actual show, the 8 o'clock show, it starts without him. And we can hear the audience upstairs. And we're just sitting there. And I said, I got to lighten this guy up. And so I'm sitting there going, this is interesting, huh? A hostless show. And he starts laughing. And he goes, I guess I should probably go back up there, huh? I go, yeah, I think you probably should go back up there. And he made it up there. I don't know how the show was cut together. I never saw it. But it was quite dramatic.
So let me just, I know it's not our, we have no information, but it is amazing. Talk about canceled. So here's a guy, I mean, boy, Has he continued to work? Is he where have you heard Heidner Hare?
I haven't heard anything, and you know, no one can deny what he said on that stage was terrible. He just, you know, you hate to see people do something like that and then not work ever again.
Yeah,
I don't
and
know.
And it's happened. He's one of a long list at this point.
Yeah, well, I mean, he was one of the first.
He makes plenty of money. Not that that's consolation. When you're an actor, you want to work. He's done a little bit of stuff, of course, with Curb and things like that through Larry and Jerry had him on his show. But no, he hasn't had an opportunity to have a vehicle again.
But I want to tell you one. I don't know how long you guys usually go on with your
guests. Go ahead. Give it.
So the late, great Ken Ober happened to be at NBC back in the 90s, I guess 92, on Johnny Carson's last day. And he's wandering around and he sees something and he decides he wants it. And when he died, his brother said to me, "Is there anything you want?" And I said, "Yep, I want that. And here it is."
Oh, wow.
Here it is.
For those of you listening, it is Johnny Carson. Now, was that outside his dressing room? What it says, Johnny Carson.
That's his parking sign.
That's his parking sign.
Yeah.
And you have it now.
I have it. It's framed.
Boy, I got to tell you, I think that's pretty, pretty cool.
That's pretty.
I loved Carson. And I remember when I was on the NBC lot. I think it was a PIN on some show. And boy, you'd see that empty spot, and then all of a sudden you see the Corvette, and then you'd see the Corvette was there. That's what he drove every day.
And so you
that
knew.
That Corvette. Yeah, and we knew he was there. And every once in a while, I'd see a glimpse of him. And he had a certain gait. His walk was so confident.
Yeah.
He really had an amazing, his chest was up.
He strode.
Yeah, he strode with a great confidence.
Fact that was from Ken, that's pretty meaningful. Because
yeah.
It is.
You know,
yeah.
Ken touched us all in a way. You guys worked with him.
What
much
a great
more closely,
swipe.
But great swipe. Yeah. But I got
I
to know Ken.
I can't believe he got away with that, man. Wow. Good for him.
I know what a good guy he was.
The first day I was ever in California was back in 1982 in August. It was when Steve Wright did the Tonight Show for the first time. And I was a house painter. I was a house painter in Boston, but I could not miss it. So I flew out, go to the show, and walking around backstage, you know, I'm like, it's like a fever dream. I can't believe
it. Me too.
And I walked by Ed McMahon at one point, and Ed McMahon, like, you know, he's
yes,
famous. And I go, he looks at me and goes, "Hello," and walks by.
Mm-hmm.
Later on, and this is Hollywood in a nutshell. Later on, I'm hanging out with a few people from the show, and I say to one of the producers, "So that Ed McMahon, he seems like a pretty nice guy." And the producer goes, "And imbecile." And I at that moment I go, "This is a tough town."
It has been a pleasure getting to know you in your life just south of Hollywood.
I have any more misadventures, let's get back on.
Absolutely.
Do it again.
And I like sharing, if you're going to be dating again in that world, I'm married, happily married, but I got tons of bad date stories. We could have a whole episode, Kenny. You can't really, though, can you, Kenny? You're like married for 87 years. You don't have a bunch of bad relationship stories.
Well, I was not, I wasn't always married.
Well, yeah, do you have, I mean, maybe for well, another
I mean,
show,
wasn't that
I would
I had
love
bad
to have
what
bad
I had were,
a date show.
No, what I had were, I didn't get as far as the date. It usually was just I was refused outright. So that's why I don't have a lot of bad dates.
Right. I don't think that counts. I don't think that counts as any part of the relationship scale.
Oh, okay. Because if you want rejection stories, I got tons of those.
We'll come up with the concept for this, Mike, and you are surely a guest. Yes.
Hey, guys, it was great. I really enjoyed it.
Really enjoyed
Thanks
having
so much,
you,
Mike.
See you later.
Bye-bye.
Yeah. I'm serious about that. Having a show where we talk about bad things. So, Kenny, you have a lot of rejections?
Well, I was not good in asking people out for a date. I couldn't go up to somebody and just go,
I like this.
Hello.
I like Hello. This. Let's talk about this. I like this.
So I didn't have the confidence. You know, but first of all, I I think it was, you know, I was an insecure kid. I was, you know, I wore glasses. I remember
I like
I
this.
got I, from 4 years old, not four, 5 years old, I remember being told by the teacher because I couldn't see the board. And the way she knew I couldn't see the board was I kept getting up from my seat, walking up to the board, and being 1 foot away from the board and just like staring at it and squinting at it.
And she didn't know what you should.
The clue the teacher to say, Kenny, go down to the nurse's office because I don't think you can see. And you know what I always remember from that, Gary?
What?
I couldn't find my way to the fucking nurse's office.
Of course, you needed glasses to find your way to the nurse's
office. I needed glasses. I was lost. I remember walking around in the school, jumping up and down, going, where's the nurse's office? I can't read any of these signs.
You got glasses, and they probably, yes. You could see, but now you're insecure because you're four-eyed Sizler, right?
And then all of a sudden, I don't know, maybe I'm 9, 10 years old, somebody decides, I was just sitting there minding my business, decides that they're going to put metal on my teeth. What the fuck is this?
So you have glasses and braces.
Yeah.
Does this take you into puberty?
Yeah, I think I went all the way to like 14. Yeah, even from my
okay,
birthday.
Okay, so you're
13,
early.
I had glasses and braces.
Your early interest in girls, you weren't a
attractive.
Wonderful.
Is that what you're trying to say? Yes.
Well, I'm trying attractive. To say that diplomat. What? Because I think you're cute as a bug. Cute
well,
as a
now,
bug.
Now, listen, I became the butterfly that I was.
You became a butterfly, yes.
Yeah.
But at the time, you were considered sort of not.
I considered me sort of, you know, that's why
so
I kind of became
low
the funny
self-esteem.
Guy. That's why
yeah.
I became the funny guy.
Yeah.
I was certainly not the cool people.
Yeah.
And so the only, and I could get beat up because I was short. I was a short kid with glasses and braces.
Yeah, that's not
so
the
So I could get beat up, and the only way I could
with.
Get out of being the beat up is if I you know, said something funny, and that would
I
that
learned
was
that
it.
Early to be funny. I was never ostracized. You know, I was never a, I'm never like the star Studley.
But you were probably good-looking, athletic person.
There would always be a girl or two who liked me.
See, I never had
and,
that.
And I learned to be funny early, not to deflect you know, antagonism, but
you
just
hey, attention.
This works. Yeah.
Right.
For attention. Right. It,
yeah.
Getting laughs mm-hmm. was huge. And I chose that over becoming an athlete or anything like that. And it's basically been my life since. I don't want to sound arrogant in any way. And I'm afraid this is because I'm not,
mm-hmm.
but
mm-hmm.
I always had a certain confidence with relationships. I would go after anybody feeling like if they rejected me, screw them.
Well, I'll tell you the other thing that I that kind of didn't work for me. You know, you'd see these movies, romantic comedies back in the day, in which they would show a woman who was like, you know, she loved, I guess maybe these were the after school special where the girl liked the really good looking guy
right.
who was athletic, but he turned out to be an asshole. And
of
it was
course.
Her friend who was the funny guy
who was there
she
for
would end
her.
Up
right.
at the end.
Yeah.
And she discovers that she likes him more because he's fun. So I thought, well, okay, I'm going to play that role.
Right.
Well, you know what I learned? That's just not true. The girl generally will stay with the tall,
that's
athletic
right.
guy.
Right. The
and
after school
go.
Special was wrong.
Exactly.
Yeah. That guy
it's a
is
nice
still the heel.
Lesson. It's just not
that
true.
That guy hears this. I love you, Kenny, but I'm not in love with you. Right.
Yes.
Right.
That's
yeah.
those are the rejections I would get. Yes.
Yeah.
Those kind of things. Yeah. Isn't it so sad? You know, I bet there's women out there now that would watch this and go, aw. Kenny,
of course
aw.
There are. And you're a married man. So all those awes that you would get, like, Kenny, I'm interested. You can't do anything. We're both married men.
Yeah. Okay.
So,
jeez,
Kenny,
you have to put a damper on that one, Gary. You'd be great at a bar. If I was talking to a hot woman in a bar, you would interject, Kenny, did you call your wife?
That would be an asshole. That's asshole
like
wingman.
That's kind of like you would do. Yeah.
Well, that happened to me once. That happened to me once. Wonderful friend of mine. I'll even say his name, Stuart Figa, because he's the most honest guy in the world. I was engaged to my first wife at Saturday Night Live. But I'm on Saturday Night Live. She's mm-hmm. in Chicago, still finishing up school. In fact, she has a boyfriend She's having an affair. So I'm kind of off the hook in terms
of... cheat on you.
She cheated on me. So I'm in New York, and there's this gorgeous model that comes to the show, and she's just all about Gary. I lit her fire. And so we're starting to get together and get cozy at a party. And she said to Stuart, "Gary and I have so much in common." And Stuart said, "Oh, are you engaged too?"
Boom, 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 boom.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Wow.
I learned.
Yeah, dames, what are you going to do? But the thing is, I will say this, Gary, is so much of life, it should be just the rehearsal for life. We should all go through life.
Yes. And then get to go back.
That I know.
Yes.
A lot about women, how to behave, how not to judge myself, yes. How not to beat myself up. I think I could do this life much better the second time around.
Absolutely. And maybe there is some, we don't get to know that we go back. Maybe we do. That's
no,
sort of
keep
my.
Fucking up. No. I don't feel I came into this life with any kind of track
previous
memory
knowledge
or guidelines or previous.
Well, you might be a newbie.
Like,
you might be a newbie in the whole.
This could be my first time.
This could be your first. I think it's my second because I learned that confidence is the thing, not cocky, but confidence.
Well, that's easy for guys that didn't have braces and glasses.
Yeah, well, okay. I have skinny.
See, that's
I have skinny legs.
If they didn't throw on the glasses and the braces, I think I would have ended up a little differently.
All right.
And speaking of ending up, so I don't know. So we're in July, right? Which, by the way, I'm reading a book. Do you know where the month July came from?
No, I don't. Get it?
I know. I was surprised in this book I read. It was Julius Caesar.
Oh, of course.
When he wanted to give homage to himself, he said, "I named this month," which had a different name, like Quintilis, whatever.
Right.
He says, "I am naming this month after my great achievements. This month is now going to be July." Could have been Julius.
Could have been Julius.
Julius, he said,
but
July.
He was alive at a time when they were making up names for months. So there's no opportunity for the month of Seisler or Kroger.
So anyhow, I was born in the month of Julius.
You were born in the month of
Julius. On the 10th of Julius.
And the product of many mint Juliuses.
Look at you. Anyhow, so my birthday is in a few days.
Yeah, it is.
Okay, how old do you think I am? Well, you probably know.
I know what you are.
What am I?
Well, you're 2 years older than me, so you're 60. You'll be 68.
Oh, you're doing no. I'm gonna be 69.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Because we started.
Shit.
Yeah, you're right.
This whole fucking life thing is really turning
holy
out
shit,
badly.
You're 60. Well, first of all, you're 69, so that's gonna be a fun year. 69. All
no,
right,
it's
69.
Not.
69.
Says,
you're still in your
60s. Birthday. How can you be happy on your birthday when you're 69?
Well, 16, but 70 is gonna be the one.
Oh, it's all going to be tough. 70. It's all that. Hey, let me tell you something.
Holy
I was thinking
fuck.
About when did I stop being glad people would wish me a happy birthday? And I think it's when you hit your late 30s and you're going and you're diving into 40s. That's
I was okay with 40s.
Wait a second. Yeah, why?
Yeah.
And from then, every birthday after that is just like, I can't believe
that. I thought of that when Paul McCartney turned 80 last year. I thought, well, you're Paul McCartney. You're the king of the world. You have been for 50 years. You're Paul McCartney. But you're 80. How do you feel good about that? Because if you're lucky, you've got 15 years.
I don't know how anybody feels about
it. Take it
I have in the next room, Gary, I have in the next room my mother-in-law, who is, what is it when you're 100 years old? What do they call it? A quintuplet. Yeah, that's what it is, Gary.
A centurion. Or a centurion. That's what
she was
Julius
born
Caesar.
In 1923.
Holy
she's
shit.
In the room next door to me. Okay? Watching TV.
Yeah.
I don't think she can hear the TV, but she's watching the TV.
that's just freaky genetics.
That.
That's very, very rare. Kenny, you probably have great genetics, but I don't think you're going over 100. I don't see
it. Here's the thing. The reason 69 is also significant in my life is because that is the year my father died, when he was 69. And I remember my father always commenting, and I don't know exactly when his father died. He would always say, I remember the year he would go, "Well, this I'm now at the age that my father died." And that really shook him.
Well, that shuts you down. My dad was 72, and I'm not looking forward to that.
That's
very close. We're not that far apart.
I know.
Wow.
Well, you know, I know, but I'm just saying, I never, listen, it's as much as you kind of know, and you shouldn't be surprised that you're getting older. It shouldn't be a surprise. Die. We all know it's happening. But when it happens, it's like, holy fuck, how did this happen?
Yeah.
You are surprised. I'm surprised that I'm going to be 69.
Well, because I had an older brother, so I was always Little Kroger. For decades, I was always, hey, Kroger got hired. He's one of the youngest cast members ever, you know, blah, blah, blah. I was the young guy for so long, and now I'm always the oldest guy in any soiree, any event.
Who do you complain to? That's my problem, is who do you complain to? Jesus.
I don't know. Right. Well, on that note... Kenny, I think we should wrap up our show.
Okay. Well, I feel like I just had a session.
You just had a what?
A session, like a therapeutic session.
Do you feel was certain that cathartic catharsis a little that happened?
Yeah.
Well, you know, it is cathartic in a way.
My chest.
I'm known for having death anxiety. Not all the time, but I will wake up in a cold sweat once in a while, having realized
what kind of anxiety.
Death anxiety. I have never been comfortable with the fact that this is this finite thing here called life.
Right.
But when I talk about it like this and laugh about it a little bit, I get my breathing back and I realize, you know what? It is what it is. The alternative was not to be here at all. Lots of George Washington died. Lots of George Clooney will die. I'm in good company. Kenny Seisler will die. A couple years before me, perhaps.
But you see,
I'm in good company.
I know,
that's,
but it's not
that's
death.
My consolation.
I don't obsess over death at all. I really don't. And I think the thing that I don't realize, because it always occurs to me that before I was born, I don't remember having any problems.
And that's Mark Twain said that, the billions of years before me didn't cause me any anxiety whatsoever.
Right.
So that
doesn't. No, what I'm saying, this was emotionally for me, is going back and thinking about my earlier days of when the first time I had to get glasses and the braces and how my life shifted into this, like, you know, I became this unattractive kid that girls wouldn't go out with. That's the source of all my problems.
Do you have any pictures of spectacled Kenny with braces? Because I would beg put them on this podcast.
Yeah, no, I would, but I don't. I have one photo of me, but I don't have my glasses or the braces yet. And I was actually pretty cute. I had big ears. I'll edit that picture.
You're a cute
but
guy.
I can't,
you're
but,
a
you
nice
know,
featured
I,
man.
Oh, jeez, guy.
And you have nice wavy hair. You're very attractive, man.
Oh, well, you.
You coming on again. Yeah, see, I've learned to just come on to everything. All right, Kenny. I'm going to call this a day.
All right. Well, it's always a pleasure.
Hey, happy birthday, because the next time I see you, you will be 69. Holy shit.
That's terrible.
Boy.
I know.
Yeah, turn
I
up the
know.
Volume a little bit so you can hear the podcast. 69. Wow. All right.
Okay. Now I'm depressed.
Well, Kenny nurses his depression. Thank you all for watching the Gary and Kenny Show or listening to it. We're on all the popular podcast platforms. We have
And
our
now we're going to be on Thread.
We're going to be on Thread?
You know, Facebook. Twitter.
Oh, right.
Mark
Zuckerberg
just announced the thing. Right. I joined Thread this morning. Did you join Thread?
I haven't yet.
No. Yeah, get on Thread.
I'll get on that. But we're on a YouTube channel, The Gary and Kenny Show. We'd love it if you subscribe. We are on DBTV, which is streaming television that you can get on Roku. So until next time, ladies and gentlemen.
Roku.
On behalf of Kenny Seisler in Calabasas, I'm Gary Kroger saying see you later.